Looking good.
Yep.
How do you look? You look good. Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel good.
How do you look? I look good. And looking good and feeling good.
What is that from?
That's the RuPaul song, Looking Good and Feeling Gorgeous.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this feels like a RuPaul song.
Yeah, for when you need a song where you're looking good and feeling gorgeous, right? Welcome to Into the Fold. It is the show where two best friends share the love of Libertuca's Grishaverse Plus. And my name is Jeff.
And I'm Juliana. And this week we're talking about the Demon in the Woods and some other adventures that Jeff and I went on. Heidi, heidi, ho.
What are we doing? What is that accent that I... Where did I get that from? It felt slightly Swedish,
but like with a hint of something else.
See, it kind of did, but at the same time, now this is how I think about things now. Like, I made up this voice. I don't even know what it is. But I'm also thinking while I'm doing it, am I being offensive to Swedish people? Because
possibly.
I have friends in Sweden now, and I don't know if they'll ever hear this or not, but I don't want them to be mad at me. I don't want them to be mad at it. But you know what? I made a choice.
You made a choice, Jeffy. You let us down this path.
It is a thing
yep.
that I did do. You know what?
What?
Because we're good at choices. Uh-huh. We are. We chose to say a lot, more than once, in fact, that we would talk about Ruined and Rising chapters 8 through 10
Lies.
On the next episode. Yeah, that turned out to not be... correct, because in fact we are talking about the graphic novel for Demon in the Woods today. Oh, by the way, also we've been saying it wrong. It's Demon in the Wood.
Oh yes, it is Demon in the Wood.
Singular. Demon in the Wood, not the Woods with an S on it, which I think is what I've been texting you.
Which I definitely put in every single thing in our planning doc, so.
It's okay. Demon in the Wood. Which is what we are talking about. And then later on in our fun segment, we will talk about some of the adventures we've been on that have completely offset our internal clocks and is probably a big part of why we're doing something different today.
Yeah. And probably will end up being the majority of the episode, let's be real here, Jeff.
Probably.
So if you don't want to hear Jeff and Juliana's Friendship Corner, oops, oh well. So...
it's okay. I think by this point, we have identified a very strong, very lovable, nougaty-centered core of wonderful listeners who are willing to be a part of our nonsense. And today, that's just, it's a little bit more you and I than the Grishaverse. And that's okay to do sometimes, because we're still doing Grishaverse stuff. It's still a Grishaverse podcast. Yeah. We just... are talking about us. And you know what? That's the way I feel like it should be, because we're best f-ing friends, dude.
Yeah.
And we haven't really been able to have a proper catch up for a while. No. So we'll talk about Demon in the Wood. I'll ask you about what you did. You'll ask me about what I did. And then that'll be the show.
Yeah.
And Melanie won't be mad at you at all, because we're definitely not going to go off on tangents.
We're definitely running on time.
Yeah, we're professional.
Yeah.
Gosh damn it. But we are going to have to talk about some news, because some things have happened. So we're going to do the news from the front.
Woo!
News.
Love it, Jeff. Love it, love it, love it. So... our first little bit of news comes from New York City Comic Con, where we had the panel with Lee and the Three Crows, and also Ben Barnes was present at this panel, which is really exciting. We had one of our correspondents and one of our friends, Kelly, who went to that panel, who will be sending us a voice message, Jeff, with a summary of her thoughts on the panel. But she did go to the panel. She really enjoyed it. She sent me some clips that I think I forwarded to you as well, that were of Lee and the cast there. And I think Kelly's big takeaway from this panel compared to other panels she went to, because she spent the entire weekend at New York City Comic Con, was that she was even more invested in the show now because she could see how wonderful the cast was and how they were all friends and really enjoyed each other and their chemistry. And she really thought, comparatively speaking to other casts, that that drew her into the show and made her want to watch it even more.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
See, I hope more people have that attitude about it, because I know that ratings for the Netflix show have actually been very good. Mm-hmm. And I can't see a huge negative reaction from the Grishaverse book fandom to the show.
No, I feel like on the whole, they've accepted it pretty well.
Yeah, it's gone over about as well as an adaptation of a major literary universe into a TV show like that can really go. But I mm-hmm. think the changes that they have made, I'm comfortable with them. I like that it's different. And even if I didn't completely love that it's different, I love that Lee is on board for this, because she's the founder of the Feast and she thinks it's great. So you know what? Everybody else who thinks there's problems can just
shove it where the sun don't shine.
In the darkling's hand.
Uh-huh. Put it in the fold.
Because, yeah, put it in your shadow fold, buddy. See, that's a Grishaverse read that, that's like our thing. Yeah. We understand what that means.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Grishaverse, Kit Young, the charming and charismatic actor who plays the charming and charismatic Jesper, Llewellyn Fahey in the Shadow and Bone series, has had yet another success on Netflix with a movie called The School for Good and Evil, which has since come out. Have you seen this movie?
No, I didn't watch it yet, but I did see that Lee attended the premiere, which was really sweet.
My wife started watching The School for Good and Evil. I assume it is a school in which you have both good and evil.
Yeah, that's probably a good guess.
It's funny, because I wanted to mention that this movie had come out, because I've become very taken with Kit Young, and yet I will not conceal the fact that I don't know much about the plot for this project. I have not seen it yet, but my wife started to watch it, and she said that it looked pretty good, and, I mean, the cast is really solid, so yeah. I'm gonna watch it, and then I will report back with what I have found out. But before we move off of Kit Young, I feel like we should mention that today is October 24th, and it is his birthday.
Happy birthday!
Yeah! Happy birthday to you.
Woo! Yeah. Oh, do you want to sing happy birthday?
Yeah, we should sing happy birthday to Kit Young, because he might hear this and be impressed with our singing.
Mm, okay. So you set the you pick the tone that we're going to sing it and the note that we're starting on, Jeff. And then we'll take it from...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Kit Young.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah. That was good.
We are like so good at like singing.
No warm up. Just straight in.
There is something that I did take in recently that came out about a month ago. Apparently, this came out on September 13th, and I think we may have just missed it. And also, we were in this weird place for the past month where recording dates were kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But on September 13th, they released a collection of 12 short stories called Marple, 12 New Mysteries, featuring the iconic Agatha Christie mystery-solving character Jane Marple. Each of these stories was written by a different fabulous author, and one of those fabulous authors was Leigh Bardugo.
Yeah, I definitely want to read this.
The funny thing for me was that I've never read any of the original Jane Marple stories by Agatha Christie, so this was my introduction to the character, and I was introduced to this character by 12 different people who did not invent her. That is a really interesting way to meet a fictional character, and the part that will not shock you is Leigh Bardugo's was by far the darkest. Like, I want to even go so far as to say that when I read she wrote the last one in the collection of 12 stories, And I would have probably been able to guess that she had some connection to this project. Like, if you told me even, okay, here's 12 stories. One of them was written by Leigh Bardugo. Figure out which one was written by Leigh Bardugo. You would know.
Mm-hmm.
If you are familiar with Leigh Bardugo and her body of work, then you would be able to pick out which one was hers.
Well, I'm excited to read it then. That sounds like a really great book. And I love a mystery. So I think that that'll be fabulous.
No doubt.
You know what else is fabulous, Jeff?
Meeting your best friend in person for the first time, which is definitely happening now.
Jeff brings this news to me at freaking 11 p.m. at night. Your girl Juliana here gets up at like 4:30 in the morning. He delivers this news to me. I'm about to go to bed and I'm like, holy freaking shit, dude. Like, oh my goodness. And so Jeff and I are going to be meeting for the first time ever in person at Wizard Fest up in Massachusetts. And anyone who's up in Massachusetts, we'd love for you to come. Jeff's going to perform. I'm going to be doing two separate panels. It is a Harry Potter, like, wizarding convention, not a Grishaverse. But if you're into that and you're looking to get tickets, we can connect you with the website and everything. But Jeff and I will both be there, and we will both be running, be taking tabs on the social media there as well, too, for the weekend. So
yeah,
keep your eye out.
It is gonna be so cool. Yeah. Like, they get in touch with me over social media as soon as I get back from playing at LeakyCon and said they wanted to talk to me about performing at their convention. So we're getting to know each other. We're working out the details. Things are going great. And I'm thinking, oh, this is in Massachusetts. It's not that far from where Juliana lives.
Yeah.
I should text her and be like, so I've booked a convention. It's in December. Guess where it is? And you were doing that thing where you text me like one word at a time. You were like, wait, no, hold on. No what? Way. And like, what?
Yeah, because well, at
like,
this point,
you're
already
not performing at Wizard Fest. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am.
Yeah. Because I had committed to doing two panels for them, like maybe like 3 weeks before you had told me.
Yeah.
So I was already going to be there, and I was already going to be there the whole weekend teaching wand dueling and doing my two panels, and also partaking in the Yule Ball and stuff. But I was just planning on being there with some of my local Harry Potter, and now to be your local Harry Potter friends, Jeff.
Yeah.
Like Mella and Anu and all those people who are going to be coming to join us.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to meet everybody who's going to be there.
Yeah. Jeff gets to meet all the people that live up here that he hasn't gotten to meet yet, and then I'll get to meet more people next year when I go down to LeakyCon. I already have my Airbnb booked, everything, so we'll see. But yeah, so Jeff and I are going to be meeting, so look forward to that. And if you're looking for some chaos on that weekend, I think it's the 10th and the 11th of December, go check out the Wizard Fest Instagram, because I'm sure that will be a mess of chaotic fun between Jeff and I both taking turns at piloting it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And you can follow, since we're doing this now, we may as well do an official plug. You can follow New England Wizard Fest on Facebook and Instagram. That's what we're rocking right now. If you go to anywizardfest.com, letter N, letter E, wizardfest.com, that's the official website that has all the information that you're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy, there are a lot of different packages as far as tickets that you can buy that have lots of extra cool stuff included in them. I have been told, though, that if you buy tickets at the door at the event, they will just have the $10 general admission tickets at the door. If you want the fancy packages that come with all the cool bonus stuff, and there is really cool bonus stuff in those packages, you have to buy them online. They will ship them to you. They're working on that right now, and It's pretty great stuff. It's going to be a really great event.
Yeah. And this is an annual event, too, that I'm sure Jeff and I will be partaking in next year, too. So if you see this and you see everything that we're doing and you want to be part of it next year, fear not, friends. You can, too, can partake in it next year. And Jeff and I will be doing the very important wizard bundle as part of our hosting and stuff and shenanigans. So again, he said, like, there are multiple tiers that you can partake in. So if you're looking to see what that tier encompasses, just hang on. We'll tell you everything. Don't worry. Jeff and I don't know how to shut up, so.
We do not. So let us mosey. Let us move into our discussion of Demon in the Wood singular.
Yes.
And I think since it was you who said, hey, we should probably do a whole episode about this.
Yeah.
I think you should get us into it. Tell us about this thing we're talking about today.
Yeah, so this is a book that just came out, I want to say about like a month ago now is when the actual physical book came to our doorsteps in our bookstores. But this book is a graphic novel. And the book overview states, discover the start of a grand and sinister dynasty in the must-have graphic novel prequel to the best-selling series and international Netflix sensation Shadow and Bone from spectacular new talent Danny Pendergast and number one New York Times best-selling author Leigh Bardugo. Before he led Ravka's Second Army, before he created the Fold, and long before he became the Darkling, he was just a lonely boy burdened by extraordinary power. Eric and his mother, Lena, have spent their lives on the run, but they will never find a safe haven. They are not only Grisha, they are the deadliest and rarest of their kind, feared by those who wish to destroy them and hunted by those who would exploit their gifts. They must hide their true abilities wherever they go, but sometimes deadly secrets have a way of revealing themselves.
Ooh.
And I will say, so this book, for me, Jeff, got a 5 out of 5. But on Goodreads, we had a 4.19 out of 5, which is still very good. That's a good rating for Goodreads, I would say.
Interesting thing for me about Goodreads is the fact that anybody can review stuff. But it's like the Rotten Tomatoes of books, because you've got professional critics and you've got average people who are rating all these things. So sometimes it's always funny to me when I look up a book that has a 1-star rating. I feel like that's kind of a giveaway that it was reviewed by somebody who is a fan who bought the book and read it, not a professional critic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like professional critics just kind of like, do they give 1-star reviews to things? And
I
just don't understand how being a critic works.
I think they do. I think it just has to be like obscenely terrible for them to do that.
Honestly, I would give it probably a 4.5 out of 5 just because it doesn't feel perfect to me. But that's honestly all to the, I feel like that just fits.
Yeah.
It fits with the overall mood of the thing, because it's classic Lee. I mean, it's literally classic Lee. She says herself in the acknowledgments at the end, she wrote this thing in 2013, the story, in the lead up to Ruin and Rising, which is the book in the main Grishaverse that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And just to kind of jump ahead to some of the things I jotted down of some of my favorite things.
Let's just get into that, Jeff.
Well, she talks about how she wrote this thing in the lead up to Ruin and Rising. And I mean, we've brought this up on the show a lot about how she said during that one interview that you weren't supposed to, she's probably said it more than once, you're not supposed to fall in love with him. His name's the Darkling. It's like naming a character Stormy McBad Guy. And you're like, okay, granted, that makes sense. But then you give him this origin story where he's got this power that he's barely able to control. He's got a girl who, for reasons that either make total sense or make no sense at all, depending on your philosophical bend, tries to do murder on him. And then you have a mom who is so into protecting her child that she will literally burn down an entire village that also has children in it, by the way, because she does not give a fuck about anybody but her own kid. And that includes y'all's kids. She will do ruination to everybody who is not her baby boy.
Yeah.
I love and hate that part.
Yeah, I think that Lee, as an author, does a really great job with this story specifically in making you feel empathy for characters that are doing terrible things. And by the end of the book and the story, you are still on the same page and the same side as the Darkling. When you end this book, you feel empathy for Eric and you feel like, I know where he's coming from. Let's freaking make Ravka happen. And even though his mom has just killed a whole village and he's just murdered two people outright, like, you still feel that sense of empathy. And I think that's what Lee is great at doing, is making people imperfect, but making you still feel like you can identify with them.
If an average citizen, whatever that means here, murders an other average citizen,
yeah,
is there any kind of authority that is going to step in and say, okay, we have a homicide. Homicide is a crime. Crimes are punishable by law. Off to jail with you, or off to be executed for you. No, because we're not concerned about everyday garden variety homicide that ends up on a true crime podcast someday. No, we are concerned with homicides that are directly related to people who wield this particular kind of power, and whether or not it is even okay for those people to exist. We are so concerned with that, that we're not worried about murder at all.
Hmm.
And there is a lot of murder in this story. By the time we're jumping ahead to the end, and then we'll go back to the beginning, but by the time you get to the end, when he murders Annika, do we feel bad about it? I'll be honest, I don't.
No.
I don't. And I definitely don't feel bad that he murders Lev, because Lev is a douche canoe.
Yeah, Lev is definitely a certified
Lev's
douche canoe.
Lev's douche canoeery predates Mal's douche canoeery.
I would put bets on facts that this is a ancestor of Mal's. I think this is like his great-great-grandfather right here that we're dealing with.
No. You know, that would be interesting, though, wouldn't it? Because that would explain, that would provide a whole new level to why the Darkling does not like Mal at all.
Yep.
That's a fascinating headcanon.
That's what I think. I think Lev is like the great-great-great-grandfather of Mal. We don't get We don't get any last names for these people in this book, so there's no way that you can prove me wrong.
It's not my headcanon. You know how sometimes somebody has a headcanon that you're like, well, that's not my headcanon, but I still really like that?
Uh-huh.
I like that headcanon. Lev is an ancestor of Mal Oritsev, and that is where he has inherited
his
douche canoeery. Yes, that is fun.
It's a generic trait.
Yes, it is a generic and a genetic.
It's
a generic genetic trait. Ooh, that's fun to say. Generic genetic. Oh, I like that. That is fun.
Yeah. No, I think it's very interesting that Lee specifically chose to have this book translated into a graphic novel, because one, this is the first graphic novel we've ever gotten from her.
Yeah.
And two, it is such a death-heavy, violence-heavy story that it's interesting, out of all the stories that she has to tell us as readers, that she chose this one that visually shows so much death and violence. And I find that to be an interesting choice. And I'm not exactly sure why she did it. I have a feeling it's because she felt like this was a story that might have gone kind of swept to the wayside. And especially with the book, with the show coming out, the Darkling is a little bit more front and center now. And people probably are asking, like, hey, where did he come from? And I feel like a lot of people kind of forgot from reading some of the Goodreads reviews and just from, like, us being part of this fandom, Jeff, that this story is located in the back of the Rune and Rising book.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been since the book came out on the original copy. So I think people have just forgotten that this exists. And I feel like she probably published this out of a sense of like, hey, why do you keep asking me this? It's in the freaking back of the book. Stop asking me these questions. And two, she felt like the Darkling story was one that largely went untold and needed to be personified in a different way. And I feel like even though there is so much violence in this story, it still is a beautiful piece of art to take in and read and look at.
I feel like sometimes certain action just translates a little bit better when you've got something visual to look at. So, I mean, you've heard people say a picture is worth a thousand words. So we could read 1,000 words written by Leigh Bardugo and it would be absolutely delicious. But I feel like by doing it this way, you experience the action of the story completely in a unique way. And that's one of the things about when you're working with an author and an illustrator who have to collaborate, is that you get the author's interpretation of the action because they created the action, and then you get That action filtered through the experience of the illustrator and Danny Pendergast. These pictures, oh my gosh.
Wow.
Oh, they are absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know what really especially struck me about these illustrations? As I said, I've read a couple of graphic novels in my day, and some of the graphic novels that I have read, they really go for it with the details, and it's obvious why sometimes it takes forever to produce one of these.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how long it takes her to do her illustrations, because it always fascinates me to see the process of artists creating. But the detail that really comes across is that none of this is overly complicated. It feels like everything that should be there to make the point is there, and it does it perfectly. But the eyes of these characters, that's one of the things that I am always so impressed by with people who can draw characters, is how do you get the eyes right? Yeah, how do you do that? Because you really, you have to convey with different looks. There's a few pages in here in particular where we see Eric going through different moods in a short space of time. Mm-hmm. And his emotional change is so noticeable in these illustrations. Danny Pendergast, you nailed it. You understood the assignment, and you really just, you and Lee should do more stuff together. You really should.
Yeah, I think it came out really great, and I definitely think that she is a fabulous illustrator, and I would love to see what else she's done as part of her, like, her works in her history and also her future going forward. But yeah, I think that it was just, it was really great. I really loved the book. Obviously, it came with its own flaws, like within the storyline, but we kind of knew some of those already, because again, this is a story that we've already read, because it's part of the, Jeff and I have finished Rune and Rising already before we started this podcast, and we knew that that was at the back of the book. So we personally had read the story already.
It hits different though.
Yeah, it definitely hits. It hits different
because it's been so long since I've read the written version of the story that I actually forgot a lot of it. Like I will admit that one of the things that was in my not so favorite pile, only because of how much it frustrates me, that I can both understand it and not understand it, is Annika turning out to be a backstabbing backstabber.
Yeah, that
I is get kind it, of frustrating. But I don't. Because she's a, on the one hand, she is a girl with power who is in an incredibly awkward and uncomfortable position because the world is ruled by men who are stupid because they're men who are stupid because they think being men makes them better, but they're just stupid.
Stupid boy.
So she will never get the opportunity to prove that she is worth a damn unless she forces them to stand up and take notice. For that, she needs an amplifier, and she sees this boy that she does not know very well, and yes, she's gonna do murder on him, and yes, that is bad. But at the same time, what if we had been following her perspective this entire time instead of Eric's? What if we knew everything she'd ever been through and we knew nothing about him? Would we be a little bit more sympathetic to the Annika character? I think we just might have been.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, I definitely think we would have been, too. And
Lev, on the other hand, total douche canoe. Having it. And one of my two, just to kind of bring it around to a favorite moment that involves both of those characters, I love that Annika got to make a kick-ass ice tree that saved her sister's life. That was fun.
That was
a really cool moment, both in the story and in the illustrations. I thought it was cool to see that. And I love the moment. This was one of the moments that made me glad that there is an audio drama adaptation of this story now that came out the same day as the graphic novel did. The moment where Eric teaches Lev a lesson by creating a helmet of darkness and putting it on Lev's head and making Lev cry like a little bitch boy. Oh man, the number of times I wish I could do something like that, like not actually physically harm people who were picking on me, just make them look dumb in front of their friends. That's a fantasy that a lot of us have had.
Oh yeah, that's fair game. But okay, So, Jeff, I guess our final question is, do we think that people should buy this book? Do we give it a thumbs up, a thumbs down? Where do we put it?
I give it many thumbs way, way up. I definitely think that people should have this. I recommend that people buy it the way I did in every different way possible. I have got a beautiful hard copy so that I can carry the illustrations around with me and share it with other people. I have got the audio drama that I can listen to, which does feature Ben Barnes, by the way. Ooh. He is very, very on board with being the Darkling and being in the Grishaverse and doing the things, because he also did the audiobook for The Lives of Saints, him and Lauren Fortgang. It's just so great that we found such a great Darkling and that he is all in on this universe. So get the audio drama version, get the hard copy, get every version of the story you can lay your hands on, and look at it over and over and over. Some parts of the story are very sad and very heavy, but the artwork is really pretty and the story is compelling. Like, I would like there to be many Demon in the Wood volumes.
Yeah, I really liked it, and I would love to see any more of the side stories or untold stories illustrated, if possible. So I think that I agree with Jeff. I think I give this 5 out of 5, a must buy, and you can just go find it over on Amazon or wherever you want to buy it, or head over to thelebardugo.com, and she has all the links there if you want to purchase the book. But Demon in the Wood, we give it a 5 out of 5.
I give it a 4.5 out of 5 again, because that just, I don't know why, it just feels better to give it a 4.5 out of 5. That just, something about it just feels right. I don't know.
You know what? You got to go with your gut feeling sometimes, Jeff.
Yeah, you do.
Okay. Knock, knock, Jeff. Hello, hello, hello.
Who's there?
It's me.
Hello, me. What's going on, eh? Where are we going? Are we going somewhere?
Hey. Yes, we're going to Jeff and Juliana's
Friendship Corner.
Yeah.
We really revamped that theme song.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. This is like the revamped version of Jeff and Juliana's Friendship Corner, because, listeners, we are going to be talking not about one, but two experiences that happened, because Jeff and I both had big, like, life-altering, life-changing experiences happen to us. And so we're going to share some smaller antidotes and, like, larger life lessons that we learned from said experiences. I have a pretty wild story that I'm going to tell, probably, because that'll be probably the most concise way to explain my Chicago Marathon experience. But I think we are going to start out with some questions that Jeff possibly has for me about my experience running the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah. So, Juliana, for your epic adventure that you went on recently, you went to Chicago.
Yeah.
It's in Illinois. Yeah. And you ran the Chicago Marathon.
I did. And
you and I have talked a lot about running, because it's a thing that we are both doing.
Yes.
And you have been doing for a very, very long time. You are very, very plugged into the marathon community.
So,
what makes the marathon experience unique to every other kind of running event?
So, for me, the marathon is just something, it never gets easy. Every time you run a marathon, if someone gets to the end of a marathon and they tell you that they're not in pain, they're lying. They're straight up lying to your face. There's no way. There is no possible way. It's something that pushes you physically, but also mentally. And I learn something new about myself every time I run a marathon and I train for a marathon. And I love that experience of pushing myself and just feeling that sense of achievement of doing something hard and knowing that I can do hard things. So that's why I really love the marathon. And that distance is different from other people, but there's a certain sauce that you get from going over 20 miles where you're like, which you might be able to speak this a little bit, Jeff, from some of your training, but like sometimes the miles over 20 just hit different.
For sure they do.
Sometimes in a really bad way, sometimes in an okay way, but usually it's like an oh shit kind of way. So
I can tell you this, when you have finally ran that distance, it makes any any run after that seems so much shorter. Like, oh, I used to do 5Ks and 10Ks all the time, and I still do. I do 5Ks and 10Ks all the time. But a 5K and even a 10K seems so much shorter when you have ran for so long that it was light out when you left, and it is dark out when you get home. And yeah. I don't just mean the sun is starting to go down. I mean the sun has been down for a while, and you're getting text messages from your partner asking, are you okay?
Where are you? Are you? Yeah. I mean, you get to the end of a marathon, and you get to 23 miles, and you have to, I always think to myself when I get to 23 miles, ooh, just a nice cash 5K to jog it in. And you've already run 23 miles at that point. You're just jogging in a nice cash 5K, you know?
Yeah.
No big deal.
So what makes the Chicago Marathon experience unique? Because you've done a few different marathons.
Yeah.
So what makes the one in Chicago special?
So Chicago is part of the World Marathon Majors, and there are six of those. Those are Boston, Chicago, Berlin, Tokyo, London, and New York. And it's very much so known on the marathon circuit that a lot of people try to do all six of them because you get a special medal and you get your name in the like forever records for doing all six of them, because they're like the six most prestigious marathons in the world. So Chicago is one of those, which is part of the reason that I wanted to do it. And having a marathon on that list also means it's one of the hardest marathons to get into, because there's so many people who want to do it. And you can get into it via time, which I did not, or the lottery, which is how I got in, or a charity. So I put my name in the lottery, they pick me out randomly. But I would say the thing that makes Chicago the most unique, and I have run the Boston Marathon twice, just for reference, people, is the crowd size of the people who show up for the Chicago Marathon. Like, legitimately, the entire city of Chicago must have been on the sidelines, because there was not a single stretch of road that did not have at least like two people deep. And this is the entire city. This is 26.2 miles of road. And for reference, the Boston Marathon comes nowhere even close to the amount of people that I saw on the streets cheering us on at the Chicago Marathon. Like, there were spots where it was like 10 people deep, 12 people deep, just cheering for everyone on the course, just so enthusiastic to see everyone pass by them and cheer on the runners. I've never seen that level of crowd support once ever in my life. It was bananas.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Nice that so many people are willing to show up and support something that they aren't actively participating in like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you haven't fully experienced like a major marathon yet, Jeff, or like an in-person marathon, but the level... Yes. Jeff will be. It's on his docket. But the thing is, with a marathon, you realize the people who are volunteering are just as invested in the race as the people who are on the course. Because you have to think, like, if you're volunteering at the water stop at mile 17, you probably had to be out there at like 7 a.m. and you're probably going to stay out there till like 3 p.m. And you're at that water stop the entire time, and you have to keep these people morale up. You have to hand off the water. So you're just as invested in them finishing as they are in themselves finishing. And I will tell you, like, marathon volunteers are a whole wonderful different breed of people, and I love every single one of them to bits and pieces.
Now, you mentioned that you have run other marathons before. You said Boston twice, right?
Yeah.
But you've never run the Chicago Marathon before?
Yeah, this is my first time getting into Chicago. I put my name in the lottery again for this year, but this is my first time ever going to the city as well, too. So that was really exciting.
And while you were in Chicago, you got to visit our fellow pod pal, Eric Skull, and his young lady, and take pictures with giant cheesy pieces of pizza.
Yeah, I got to see Eric and Meg, and we got to go see some of the cool places that they really love in Chicago. And the Pizza Wizard if anyone who listened to PuffCast, the Pizza Wizard got to meet, hello, the Pizza Wizard, if anyone knows who that is. He got to meet the real deep dish pizza of Chicago, which I will say, Chicago needs to take that back. That is not pizza. That is cheese pie. Like, it's all cheese. Like, it's literally just like all cheese with like
a. And the problem is what?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. They just misnamed it.
It's cheese pie. Sounds right to me.
Cheese pie.
I have also experienced the Chicago deep dish. Can confirm, if anyone listening to this has never been to Chicago and had like their actual deep dish, it's cheese pie.
Yeah, it's cheese pie.
And they do call it pizza pie. You know, pizza is technically a pie.
Yeah, but they like really take pie to heart, and they like make it like a full on pie. Like, Massachusetts pizza is not a technically speaking, a pie. I would say Chicago pizza, technically speaking, is like a legitimate pie.
Yeah.
With the pie pan and everything. Fair. So that was very fun. It was nice to see Eric. It was nice to see Meg again. And then I got to see some of my other friends. I got to see Ashley and Anna and a few other people. So that was really nice. But I think what we should do, Jeff, is I would like to tell you my story of what happened during the Chicago Marathon, because I think people will find this to be a wild time. And then I'll wrap it up and we'll hand it over to you. Does that sound okay?
That sounds great, because the last question I was going to ask you was if there was any unexpected surprises that came up. So go for it.
Oh, yes. Okay. So normally I start taking my electrolyte fuel caffeine mixture around somewhere between miles like 17 and 20. So that way I don't drink caffeine except for during marathons. So that way it gives me a good kick in the ass and I can mentally get my way to the end of the marathon. Because that's the hardest part, is mentally keeping yourself in there those last like 6 miles. Because your brain is like, I'm freaking tired, I want to stop. And your body's in pain and you're just like, but I need to get to the end. So I started taking my electrolytes. I had been taking water a little bit throughout the way. And all of a sudden, instead of feeling better, I start feeling like worse. And I'm like, that's weird. Because again, this is a system that I've used many, many times before. And I just keep drinking it. And I'm like, I keep just feeling worse. And then all of a sudden, I get this like sharp pain up through my right foot, which is bizarre because that's never happened to me before. And then it goes away. And then my muscles that I know are that cramp when I get dehydrated started cramping up really bad. And those are the muscles that when they start cramping up, I also know I'm in trouble. Anyone who runs a marathon will also know their body, like almost down to like the exact muscles. And they'll be like, oh crap, like that muscle is bothering me now. I gotta do this X, Y, and Z. I gotta stop and stretch. And so those muscles started hurting me. I had like 4 miles left to go. So I was just like so much in pain. My legs were like seizing up. I somehow ran my way to the end of the marathon. I got there. The longest 800 meters I think I've ever run in my life. They actually mark it out. Each meter mark, they're like 800 meters to go, 600 meters to go, 400 meters, longest 800 meters I think I've ever run in my life. I finally get to the finish line. I'm like in this weird, like dazed state. I'm not really sure like what's going on. I'm mouth breathing weird. I can think kind of straight, but I'm like still like a little bit out of it, way more than I've ever felt at the end of a marathon before. But I can walk and I start walking and I go get my gear check bag. I lose my headphones, which are pricey headphones. So I was kind of upset about that. And then I make my way down to porta potty change and I get on the train to go back to my apartment. Cause I'm like, I just need to go back to my apartment. Where I'm staying. I need to just lay down. And like, cause I was by myself. I went and I ran and no one met me at the end. And so I had like just enough energy to get into the apartment and like lay down. And I slept for like 3 hours. And then I went to get up and I was having horrible vertigo. Like I was just like ready to fall over with every step that I took. But I only got up because I had that constipation episode earlier, and I knew if I didn't take my GI medications, then I would be f***ed. So I got up, I took my GI medications, which includes like some fluids and also some electrolytes, and like half an hour later, I started feeling better. And during that time, I went to like clean up all my shit from the marathon, like clean up all my dirty clothes and clean out my water bottle and things like that. So I go to clean out my water bottle and I'm cleaning it out and I find something inside of it. I'm like, what the hell is this? And so essentially it was one of those like silica packets that they put in like toys and stuff to keep them the fluid out and keep things from getting moldy. It's essentially a dehydrant. And that had been in my fluids bottle since the night before because there happened to be one at the bottom of that water bottle, which has never happened to me before. And I had essentially brewed myself dehydrant laced tea.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I had been, I was very lucky. If I hadn't had like electrolytes in that beverage already that I was taking in, I probably would have fainted like straight up on the course.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it was a wild time. I do want to go back and run the Chicago Marathon again because for some reason, even with all those issues, I came in under 4 hours. So I was going at a good, I know, I was going at a good clip before I hit that barrier. So, you know, like maybe next time I'll have an even better time, but plus, I didn't get to fully appreciate and enjoy the finish line, which is one of my favorite parts, as for most people, of running a marathon. Is like, even, no matter how tired you are, you can usually rally yourself to like be excited at the finish line. But because of the weird mental state of dehydration I was in, I just couldn't. So, yeah, that was Juliana Chicago Marathon experience.
The fact that you brewed that, like when you finally, when you got to here's this toxic thing that was in this beverage I drank. Like, how did, thank goodness you're alive. I mean, never mind that you finished the marathon. That's just even more impressive now.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. There are multiple times where I'm like thinking, like, I am lucky to just physically not be in a hospital in Chicago right now with a concussion or a brain injury or something like that. Or, yeah, there were a few, there was a lot of weird things working against me, but also a lot of weird forces kind of helping me out at the same time. So, yeah, that was my Chicago Marathon experience. And from now on, I will be checking the bottom of every single water bottle that I put water into. So don't worry, that will not happen again.
Well, you promised us a great story and you gave us one.
Yeah, I'd like to try, you know. So I think what we should do then, Jeff, is let's move on over to our interview with you, because you did something equally as fun, equally as amazing. And you went to LeakyCon and you were a performing artist for them.
I was. I do, for people who don't know, I do the Wizard Rock. It is a thing. It is a great thing. Look it up. I was contacted earlier this year by someone who said they were booking the talent for the Wizard Rock show at LeakyCon, which is always a big part of LeakyCon. If you don't know LeakyCon, it's Harry Potter Comic-Con. That's what I've been saying that to people, because it is a way to make people who aren't plugged into that fandom understand the context for what it is. Mm-hmm. So, this year they split LeakyCon into two different conventions, which was an idea they had before, but then they had to abandon that because of the pandemic. They didn't have LeakyCon for a while. And so, earlier this year, they had LeakyCon in Orlando in the summer, and then this past month they had LeakyCon in Denver. I was contacted, I think it was April. It was definitely sometime at the beginning of the year. And they asked if I wanted to play in the Wizard Rock show at LeakyCon. And after I checked to make sure it was a legitimate offer, because it seemed too good to be true, I said, sure, but I might have some trouble affording the trip there. And they wrote back and said, oh, don't worry. We have a whole like package that we can offer you. And they took care of everything. It was incredible. I had absolutely everything that I needed. And I got to go to this amazing convention, and I got to play some incredible music with some of the most talented and fun people that I've ever met. And I just, every moment, every picture, every conversation that I had is its own story.
Why don't you, like, what's your, like, top story from this convention? Like, if you had to pick one moment where you're like, that was something that maybe you weren't expecting to experience and it was so amazing, or something that you were thinking was going to be the top moment for you but and really did live up to that expectations, like what pops into your brain?
Well, as far as things that I was expecting that definitely did live up to and beyond the hype was getting to meet my friends Brian and Bradley from legendary wizard rock band Draco and the Malfoys.
Yeah.
Because not only are they the nicest, sweetest guys, but they were genuinely enthusiastic about meeting me as well. We got to play this incredible show together. Bradley and I even got to play a song together at the show. And then we had a jam session on Saturday night. We kind of took over one of the panel rooms that wasn't being used. And it was a bunch of Wizard Rock people, including people who didn't get to play in the concert. And we just jammed. Like, we just played each other's songs.
Yeah, it was so cute.
And so here I am, 1 minute, I'm standing next to Draco and the Malfoys playing one of their songs, and then they're standing next to me playing one of my songs. And I thought, how did I get here? Like, it kept happening to me all weekend long. I kept having these moments where I kept saying, how did this work out? Like, how is this even my life right now?
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. But as far as something I was not expecting that I will live in my heart forever, there was a young person who was at the convention with their mother who came to a panel that we did. It was the one like really serious panel that we did about separating art from the artist and what to do when you can't anymore. That's what it was called. I was invited to be on that panel by my talented friend Laura, who is from the band The Weirdos Are Out. And afterwards, this person came up to me with their mom and asked to take a picture, and they both told me about how much it meant to them to hear the things that we talked about during the panel and to hear me being authentically and proudly myself, because like me, this person is a non-binary person who is starting to understand things about who they are. And it was really, really important for them to be at that panel, at that convention, surrounded by so many understanding people. And they posted about it on their Instagram story. They tagged me in it, and I read that post, and I took a screenshot of it, and I sent it to my friend Bess from WCRD Radio, and I said, okay, now I'm crying.
Aww.
That's so nice, Jeff. Oh my gosh.
Jeff.
Oh, you can't see my face. Yeah. But, oh, my goodness. Oh, well, just the fact, I had no idea that anything I did or said would have that mm-hmm. kind of impact on anybody, but the fact that it did and they took the time to express that to me, just I can't even tell them like what it meant to me to have that moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet, Jeff. And that's when you realize that like the thing that you really love doing is actually bringing joy into other people's lives. Because I think like especially as people who do podcasting or like you, Jeff, put out music, we don't get to like interact one-on-one with the people who listen to our stuff that we put out as much as we'd like to, or interface with these people. Because you can very easily anonymously listen to music or a podcast, but we don't know the level of change and influence and positivity possibly that we're bringing into people's lives, just because a lot of people just don't know how to express that back, or they feel like a lot of the times, especially if it's someone they're not being able to see in person, that it's not an accessible person. They're like, oh, it's a celebrity. And I think it's just so wonderful that you got to be a positive influence on this kid's life.
It really was. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice, Jeff. I really like that story. Is there any other like highlights that you wanted to share? Anything else that really just like shook you?
Oh man, where do I start? Okay, I'll give you one.
Okay.
So one of the people I was very, very excited to meet was Chris Rankin. Chris Rankin is the gentleman who played Percy Weasley in the Harry Potter films. He does the podcasts, the conventions. He's really great about it. He's very, very enthusiastic and supportive friend in the community and ally to the LGBTQIA plus community. And he was there with his equally fabulous fiance Nessa. I got to have meals with them a lot. And as a lot of people will know, because we've talked about it, we are obsessed with Puffs, the play.
Yes. Oh my gosh, and
a few months ago, they had a charity auction on eBay where they auctioned off the costumes from the original production, and I bought the narrator's costume, which I wear all the time, especially on occasions such as LeakyCon. There's no way I was going to go to LeakyCon and not wear that outfit. So I'm explaining all this to Nessa and to Chris, and as it turns out, AJ Diddy, the incredibly talented actor who played the narrator in Puffs, is a friend of theirs.
Oh, so really? Day,
oh, yes. Oh, yes. They know him. They have his phone. They don't just like text him over Instagram, I think. I think they might actually have his phone number. I'm not sure.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't ask for that. But what happened was I wore the outfit on the second day of the convention. Nessa took a picture of Chris and I with me in that outfit, and she texted it to AJ Diddy, and he texted her back, wow, that's incredible. They nailed it. Like, I really tell the cosplayer that I applaud their attention to detail. And she texted it back and said, that's not just a costume. That's the costume from the show. They bought it in the auction that they did for the Ali Forney house. And he was like, what? And then, as if that wasn't enough, Nessa got AJ to record a voice memo for me as the narrator.
Oh my gosh.
He texted that to her. She then forwarded it to me, and I've got it on my phone now.
Oh, that's so nice.
Oh my, I just, and that's another thing. I thought, I was just sitting a couple months ago, I was sitting in a room recovering with two cats recovering from surgery, watching Puffs for the first time. So I become obsessed with it. We become obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And then I follow them on Twitter, which is how I heard about the auction. And if I hadn't heard about that auction on Twitter, I might not have that costume, and I might not have had this incredible moment where somebody that I met who was connected to AJ then connected them to me.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's so insane, but it's so wonderful.
It is. And I have to, like, I have to reverse engineer it like I just did every time I think about it in order to convince myself that this really happened. It wasn't just, like, I didn't dream that. It really happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, especially you and I, Jeff, like, these past couple of years or so have really started, like, trying to live our truth the best that we can and just, like, be Jeff and, like, be Juliana. And that has brought us to points where we're like, holy crap. Like, this is my life.
I know.
It's absolutely just, like, it's wild. From the small things to the big things, it's, like, it's just bananas as to what we can do if you just, I think a lot of it is just, like, putting it out there that you want something, being positive about it, and then, like, actively taking some kind of steps towards achieving that goal. Because, like, nothing about my process or your process, Jeff, has been perfect in any capacity.
And it never will be.
Yeah, and that's just part of it. But we definitely, I feel like, personally, and I feel like for you too, have been really getting the most out of what we can out of life recently. And I think that really shows in a lot of the, like, personal achievements we've had and just, like, personal, like, even personal moments for us ourselves. Because to someone else, like, meeting the narrator, like, meeting Percy Weasley and meeting... figuring out that he knows the narrator Puffs, like, to other people might not be a big deal, but to you, and I know to, like, to me, if someone said that, like, that would be a huge deal. So it's just bananas. Just absolutely bananas. And bananas. I'm so happy. Bananas. Yeah.
It's bananas.
Bananas. Thanks to banana.
Sounds a banana.
And the pizza wizard! Who knows, Jeff? Maybe the pizza wizard and Santa Banana might make an appearance at Wizard Fest.
That, you know what, it would be a shame if they didn't.
I think so too. I think so. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And just shorthand again too, you got invited to Wizard Fest because of LeakyCon, specifically because our friend Dominique met you, whom I've actually interviewed before for Puffcast, and who is the one of the workers at the Orchard Works Wands studio down in Stamford Springs, Connecticut. Shout out to Ed and his lovely wife who also own that shop. We love them very much. And they are Ed and Dominique is one works for Ed, but Ed is one of the people who is leading the charge for Wizard Fest starting this past year. And he is the one who kind of made it possible that Dominique could connect with you and then get you into Wizard Fest. So you kind of you put a nice stamp on Dominique's soul, and she said, I like this person a lot. I must get him to perform for the festival that I am helping with. And here you are, Jeff, coming to Massachusetts.
Indeed I am.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll just say, for a personal note, I got multiple messages from people the entire weekend of LeakyCon saying that they had met you and how wonderful you were. So
I will get screenshots of those messages. It would be great for my self-esteem.
The first one I got was from Danny because she wanted to pronounce your name correctly. And she's like, you got to tell me how to pronounce Jeff's name correctly so I can go see him. She's like, I see him from across the room and I want to go say hi, but I don't know if he pronounces it Geoff or Jeff or Graff or whatever. I was like, you can just call him Jeff. Like, that's he just spells it with a G.
Oh, man. That is adorable. Danny from Creating Magic Podcast was such a sweetie. I ran into her so many times, and every time I ran into her, it was such a treat. She just was so terrific.
Yeah, Danny is really, she's a really awesome person and someone who we're looking forward to seeing when we go back to LeakyCon next year, Jeff, right?
Oh, absolutely, most definitely, for sure.
Yeah, so I would say that I'm definitely campaigning for Jeff to be part of the LeakyCon lineup next year. So I would say, based off of my recommendations alone, look forward to Jeff being on the LeakyCon musician lineup this year, just from the reviews that I got from other people and then my own personal review of Jeff as a human being. And he gets to look forward to me being in the front row of his performance at Wizard Fest, screaming for him, yeah, Dream Quaffle! Pew, 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 pew! I know him! Yeah, so look forward to that.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep the energy high, you know?
Even if they don't book me to perform at LeakyCon, I'm still going to go because there's no way. The number of people that I care about who are going to be there, no way I'm not going to show up.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be a fun time. And we get to go. You get to go experience Chicago for the first time.
I would really like to experience Chicago because I have not really been in the city since sixth grade on a class trip. And then also one time during an experience going to a concert with my wife where we were really focused on the concert and did not care about Chicago at all because driving through downtown Chicago is stressful.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess.
It is not fun. I will say that. Nothing against the people who are in the Chicago area, whom I respect and admire and love, but it is terrible driving in your city. It sucks.
Bad. Yeah. We'll say, though, Jeff, not as bad as Boston. Boston's pretty bad.
I am also looking forward to not driving in Boston.
Yes. Look forward to that.
Not driving in Boston. Not doing it.
No, sir.
Nope.
No, ma'am.
Nope.
Okay, so I think that's going to wrap up our Jeff and Juliana's Friendship Corner. Yay!
Yeah!
So we did have a question for our last episode.
And a long time ago.
A long time ago.
You know what? It's been so long, I forgot we asked this.
Yes, I went back and I found it.
We asked people if they would give us a funny insult for the apparat. I forgot that this was a question that we wanted to know the answer to.
Yes, and the question was, Jeff, give us a funny insult for the apparat, example being douche canoe. So, we got some good ones, and we had Knotted Yarn 112 say, one of my favorite insults is wet sock. Nothing is truly more annoying than a wet sock. I think it's especially fitting for the apparat because I would say, in addition to what Knotted Yarn said, I will say the apparat smells like a wet sock. So I will second this.
I agree. Wet sock. He is a wet. Some people are wet blankets if they're like party poopers. He is a wet sock because he is just annoying and you can't do anything about him.
Yep. Okay. And then we had Aram McPhail, 56, say the apparat, otherwise known as the archaic incel. Sorry. Did I say archaic? Is that say archaic?
Archaic incel.
Yeah.
It is difficult to laugh at that word, but it just...
It's so wild.
The way they presented it like that, it just, I can't help it. It's funny.
Yeah. Okay. And then we had Jenna say, like a nasty roach, you're always turning up even when we think we've finally gotten rid of you. And every time you turn a corner, there he is again, scurrying towards you. And every time you stomp him out, he's back again in a few days. So Jenna thinks he's a roach. I say, yeah, he is kind of a nasty roach.
Yup. Yeah, he definitely is. It doesn't matter. Even if you cut off his head, he still somehow manages to survive. That's cockroaches, right?
I think they can survive
without their head.
I think so. I could be wrong.
I'm gonna stick with that until somebody tells me otherwise.
I like that.
I think this next one is my favorite, though.
I was gonna say this one. I feel like speaks to you, Jeff.
Yeah, Kayla.
Kayla Koft.
Yes, I'm good at words.
Yeah.
This wonderful person wrote, he seems like someone who would put raisins in potato salad.
Now that is an evil thing to be doing. That is a low blow apparat.
Why? What's wrong with raisins?
Why would you put raisins in potato salad? That's so weird.
Who cares?
That's
it's
a
like
wild
the pineapple
choice.
On pizza argument. Why is this a conversation?
I think because it's just someone woke up and chose violence, and someone also woke up and chose raisins and potato salad.
You know what? If your idea of choosing violence is putting raisins and potato salad or putting pineapple on pizza or putting nutritional yeast in your banana pudding or whatever, then fine.
Fine.
You know what? It's just for some reason, it's a sentence. It reads to me like those I don't know if he still does it, but you remember when Jimmy Kimmel was putting out all those compilations of celebrities reading mean tweets?
I avidly love mean tweets so much.
I just love those. The one that always I remember is there was one where it was the hip hop edition, and they said Awkwafina has the voice of a 58-year-old divorce attorney.
Some people just like they're so creative with their things. They're like,
that's what this would be.
I love it.
Apparat seems like someone who puts raisins in potato salad.
I love it.
What the hell is wrong with raisins in potato salad? I don't get it.
Oh my god. Okay. And then we have one last insult from our friend Kneepads. And Kneepads said, for the insult, us Aussies have some really good ones, although many of them are extremely rude. E.g., one of them that would be very fitting, but probably can't be used, is f*** knuckle. A more PG version could be dipstick or dip shit, but I mean, f*** knuckle's a good one. That's a good one.
F*** knuckle.
Yeah. Okay.
It's because it rhymes.
Yeah, it does rhyme. It's very good at rhyming.
It's because it rhymes. It's so good.
Yeah.
Those are great. But you guys really came through with the insults for the apparat. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. Now, our next question, if you guys, you know what, anytime, even if we ask you a serious question, if you guys want to provide a silly answer, that is okay. Because sometimes we go back and forth on that. Sometimes we ask questions that I feel like are kind of designed to elicit funny responses. And then some of them are kind of thinkers. Because you know what? We have a very clever audience of listeners that even when they're not trying to, whether they're trying to be funny or not, they're very insightful. So you just, you want to ask them stuff like that. So for our next question, we're going to bring it back to Demon in the Woods, since that's where we started today's episode. So we want to know, do you think that Demon in the Wood makes the Darkling a more sympathetic character? Admittedly, it gets a bit harder to see him as a sympathetic character the more destruction he does and the more people he has to do bad things to in the canon books. But this backstory that we get provides a different context for the Darkling, I think. So I want to know, do you guys think that Demon in the Wood makes Darkling a more sympathetic character? And you guys can email us your answers, or you can DM us your answers on Instagram, and just let us know how you guys feel about this question. We would really love to know.
Yes. And next time, listeners, we promise we are going to do chapters 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, we're definitely doing it. It's not like when George R.R. Martin says the dragons are on their way and then they don't get there for a long time. Like, it's really, no, it's for real. Like, we're going to talk about chapters 8 through 10 of Ruin and Rising on our next episode. Yes. Definitely, for sure.
Yes. And in the meantime, if you'd like to get in contact with us here over on Into the Fold, you can listen to our podcast anywhere where pods are cast. You can also find us on YouTube at Into the Fold Podcast.
And our Instagram is at Into the Fold Pod, where we post all the things that we're up to. We post updates about the show. We keep in touch with our listening audience that way. So feel free to join us on the Instagram if that's your job.
And if you'd like to send us a longer form response, you can send us an email to intothefoldpod@gmail.com. And you can also check out our Etsy shop, which is the Grisha Trading Post, for stickers and custom Keftas made by me and some sweatshirts. Yay!
Merchandise,
baby.
And if you'd like to do something nice to help out the show and make our day and make us smile, we would love it if you would leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, anywhere you catch your pods. If you are leaving us a review on a podcatcher and we are not acknowledging it because it's maybe not Apple Podcasts or Spotify, then please let us know if you have done so, so that we can keep an eye on those podcatchers as well. But we do appreciate any time you guys take the time to let us know what you think about what we're doing here at the show.
Yes. And if you'd like to let other people know about the show who you think would enjoy it, tell your friends. The best way that podcasts are spread is by word of mouth. And we really appreciate anyone who has shared this show with anyone else And we love you very much. And until next time.
We are going to be seeing you in the fold, please.
In the fold.
I have brought back the nonsense from before.
Oh.
It is the return of my nonsense in a black ear.
Like kind of vibe as the peanut butter song where it's like peanut 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 peanut. Like it's just start like that backbeat is like part of another song that's on my running playlist, so every time I hear it I'm like peanut 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 peanut. I like it. Do you know anything else about it?
I'm looking it up because I want to be well informed.
I don't know anything else about it.
Professional person. Yeah.
To the main discussion. Area. Corral. Arena. Place.
Those are words.
I know words.
Those are words and you know them.
I know them. I'm smart. They gave me a college degree twice.
They did do that.
Who are those idiots who did that?
This is the part of the show where Juliana steps away to take a phone call and Jeff has just got to sit here and talk to themselves. And then we'll get back into the show when Juliana gets back. Nothing, nothing, nothing makes me happy, happy, happy.
Ooh,
doing
boy.
Stuff is just what I avoid. So nice. If you haven't tried nada, I really think you oughta. Cause no work and all play makes me a big sexy boy. Big ol' sexy boy.
Great time filler, Jeff.
Thank you. I think it's from the audiobooks of the series of unfortunate events. They go to a carnival in one of them.
Oh,
and
the,
there's
yeah.
a fortune teller character.
I think you're
who
right.
Talks
actually.
Like that.
Yep, I think you're right.
She's like, "Oh, my dear Olaf, you have come to me once again, please. Can you please hand me the pitcher of water, please?
Yeah, I think you're
I do
right.
not want pickles on my hamburger, please."
Yep.
It is so hot in this god dang tent, please.
I think
like,
you're right.
Like everything is please at the end, and that's their phony baloney accent. Please.
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 I would like to go and run the Chicago Marathon, please. But please do not give me the tea that is poisoned, please.
Oh.
Because well, I would like to stay hydrated for the show, please.
I mean, I feel like that subplot of what happened to me is definitely part of the series of unfortunate events. Like, let's be real here.